going to start with the first half of our talk today, which I'll be giving. And before I go into the first and second foundations of mindfulness, I kind of wanted to start with a little bit of an introduction. I think all of us are probably acquainted to some degree with the benefits of mindfulness, but if you're like me, it really helps to hear them, to have them come alive with you. This is discussed in the sutta as the direct route to Nibbana or Nirvana, right? Mindfulness being this way that you can achieve an end to the cycle of suffering without having to believe in a bunch of stuff. Right? If you think about it, there are all these paths that require you to believe things about the way the world is, about the existence of God, about, things that are true about ourselves or what happens when we die. All of these things that, we may have beliefs around, but also we may have disagreements around because they're not things that we experience tangibly and directly and consistently across all of us. And there's something kind of great to me about this idea of a direct route that requires nothing but paying attention to our experience. I mean, isn't that great? There's just something to that that's very grounded in reality, in just what we can observe. So there's that benefit, right? Route to Nirvana, not a bad place to start for benefits of mindfulness. And I think we all probably can touch the fact that this offers an understanding of ourselves, right? There's some way that we can understand who we are, how we respond to things, our relationship to the world, how we get through life, how we navigate it with more ease. We can all touch that fact that mindfulness brings us closer to that. We get more ability to choose how we respond to every situation that comes at us when we're aware of all the things we're feeling in every moment, right? I'm starting to get upset about something. Wait, this is a moment where I can choose what I do next. My own personal story is I came into this practice because I had sort of entered a state where I felt that emotions seemed to come from nowhere, and then they just controlled me. I wouldn't even know for most of the time. If you asked me, are you stressed? Are you upset? Are you happy? Are you sad? Most of the time, I had no answer to that question. I didn't know. And when something, of course, there was something there. I just wasn't really in touch with it. And it had to get to a level of extremity. It had to become extreme enough for me to really feel it. And then suddenly it would feel overwhelming. I would be very upset by something and it would control me, right? And in doing so, it had begun to disrupt relationships I valued in my life. And it also just felt, I felt kind of out of control, right? I didn't really know where these things were coming from, where they were going to lead me. And so, I had had some experience with meditation throughout my life, and I kind of pointed me to return to it because I knew that there was something in that experience that could guide me out of this. So I was fortunate enough to kind of have that grounding to say, okay, I need to return to this. And gradually I began to have a better sense of when emotions were very subtly arising and growing. And, you can start to see the stories and the thoughts that they create, right? You start to feel something, you feel unpleasant or unhappy about a thing. And suddenly, these stories and these thoughts kind of come out. And sometimes they're habits, right? They're repetitive thoughts that you can see the patterns of. You can see that you do this over and over again if you're noticing. And I would see what they were. Oh, there that person goes again. I knew she would do that, or she always does that. You kind of reinforce these ideas about the world that maybe aren't really even true. Okay, with that, I want to talk a little bit about the Satipatthana Sutta. Lindell mentioned this sutta. It is the teachings of the four foundations of mindfulness that we'll be discussing today. And really, The sutta, Satipatthana Sutta, is a set of instructions for how to establish mindfulness, right? It's, you know, it's often translated as the foundations of mindfulness, but it can also be translated as the way to establish mindfulness, like a how-to journal for how to establish mindfulness. So one thing I love about this, and I kind of said this at the beginning, is it's very practical. You know, what we're going to discuss today is not really something esoteric or some abstract set of concepts. This is a how-to for establishing mindfulness. And, you know, as such, the four foundations, the four, aspects of our moment-to-moment experience that we'll be touching on in order to establish mindfulness are the body, feeling tones or vedana, the mind, and the dhammas, which are also sometimes described as mental states. So I wanted to share, you know, in putting all of these together and seeing them as a flow, Gil Fronsdal has a wonderful way of describing them. So they kind of all come together and don't feel like different things. Let me see if I can share my screen for a moment and put that up. So this is a very crude thing that I put together based on his talk. But on the left column, I'm describing the four foundations, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of feeling tones, and so on. And here is how he describes it as a flow from our outermost experiences or our coarsest experiences to these innermost. So we start by establishing mindfulness of the body. Why? This is coarse. This is something we can all touch and feel. We know we have a body, right? Very few of us would doubt that we have a body. It's a very tangible part of our experience. It's something we start with. And in this experience, we often start with the breath, right? We start with the breath, this thing that always is with us. And we move from there to other parts of the body. From there, we go to the second foundation, feeling tones. You can think of this as what it feels like to be in the body. These are our immediate responses to sensations, sensations we feel in the body. It can also refer to sensations in the mind or other things. But the way he describes it, he's talking about coming out from this coarse sense of body to just these immediate reactions we have to those sensations. A little bit more subtle than the body, but still on the coarser side. From there, we go to the mind. He describes this as the inner quality of our state of being, right? We're going inwards here. From there to the dhammas, also described as mental states. And he has a very interesting description of what that means. He describes it as an awareness of how the things going on in our mind, just touched upon the mind in that third foundation. This is how all of those things we can observe in our mind affect our state of being. So how do those things affect us? Lindell gave some great descriptions when we were talking about the dhammas, the mental states. You know, it's not just these thoughts as objects. It's these things we can feel, like the hindrances, greed, aversion, clinging, right? Like these are mental states. They're not mere thoughts. They're states, right? And they affect our state of being. We can see how that happens. So I love this flow here. From outer to inner that he describes. So I wanted to share that. Now, one thing I find very interesting here too is even though we're going inwards, as we go from one foundation to the next, paradoxically, we are entering a much larger world, right? Not a smaller one. You know, we're gaining more access to all the things that are our experiences and that we inhabit. All right. So I'll stop there with just an overview and move into the body just for the sake of time. As I mentioned, the body is a very accessible aspect of our experience. We can see it, we know we have it. And in a sense, the goal of this practice of mindfulness of the body, this first of the four foundations, is to break our attachment to the body, right? We start by practicing with the phrase, there is a body, right? There's a lot in that phrase. It's here, it exists, It is part of us. But there's a sense of detachment in that phrase. Oh, yes, there's a body. I have a hand. I have an eye. It isn't the whole of us, right? It's something we can observe existing, right? When we practice with the body, we often begin with the breath. And there's some very specific practices that the Satipatthana Sutta recommends. When we breathe in, know that we're breathing in. When we breathe out, know that we're breathing out. When you're letting your breath go naturally, sometimes you have long breaths, sometimes you have short breaths. If you have a long breath, know that you're breathing in a long breath. When you're breathing out a long breath, know that you're breathing out a long breath, so on and so forth with a short breath. We move from that breathing practice, that identifying that we're breathing, knowing that we're breathing, to breathing the experience, to touching the experience of our whole body through the breath, right? As we breathe in, our whole body expands. As we breathe out, our whole body contracts. We can start by feeling that expansion and contraction and move from there to an awareness of the body as a whole, all the sensations that are going on in our body. We can also use the breath to relax our body. We breathe in, relaxing the body. Breathe out, relaxing the body. This is all preparation. This is all getting in touch with that first foundation, getting to that state of calm, getting to that state of being in touch with this thing. There is a body, this thing that is the body. So another practice, and I find this very powerful, when we do body practice, is practicing with four different positions of the body. There are four positions mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta. There is sitting practice. This is what we're doing here. Standing practice, walking practice, lying down practice. And in each case, we're being aware of the body. So I'd invite you, especially if you're someone who's usually sitting, to explore these other modes, right? The body can feel different. You'll never know what you can find if you're exploring the body in a different mode. Lying down, what does the body feel like? How in touch with you? How in touch with the body are you? Do you have different sensations when you're lying down? The other wonderful thing about those four positions is they mean you can practice all the time, right? This is a way of bringing mindfulness to our daily lives in the most real way. We don't have to be sitting here with the bell ringing to be practicing this. We can be doing all the sitting, standing, walking, and lying down we do in life, and we can bring mindfulness to the body in each of those. The Satipatthana Sutta also mentions contemplations of the body that I think are quite powerful. So there is a contemplation in which it describes 32 parts of the body, and you're focusing on each of those parts of the body. And this includes, like, you know, not just the things you might do in a body scan. It includes the blood, pus, organs, spittle, all of these things that, you know, maybe that the body is made of, that our bodily experience is made of. And what we're doing when we identify those things is, in a way, we're decreasing our attachment to the body, right? Are we our spittle? If we didn't have spittle, would we disappear? Do you reside in your pus? Do you reside in your blood? Are those things fundamentally you? What if they were gone? What if your finger was gone? You know, would you be gone? Are you the rest of your body or that finger? You know, and it doesn't matter if you answer these things. It's really this recognition that there's no specific part of our body that defines who we are. And then if you put it all together, we can kind of get a detachment from the whole body. It's the reason for that kind of contemplation. Another contemplation I wanted to call out from the sutta is death and decay, right? You know, monks used to sit with rotting bodies in contemplation of death and decay. Why do that? You know, we're sitting with bodies that are no longer attached to any sense of selves, right? We can look at these bodies, see our own body in these bodies, and recognize that they're just matter at that point, right? That's just a pile of stuff. And that's what we become, right? What's a body without a self attached to it? All creating this kind of sense of a little bit of detachment, a little bit of objectivity towards our bodily experience. And then we can take that to our lives, right? You know, and just sort of see what happens to our body with a little bit more objectivity, a little bit more ability to remain calm and really, really decide how we address what we found when we experience something in our bodies. Feeling tones. As we become more intimate with our body, we come into contact with these subjective experiences of our body. We call them feelings or feeling tones or vedana. This is the second foundation of mindfulness, right? You know, if a cool air brushes against me, I feel the coldness, right? I might feel it on my cheek. That's the body. But then I might feel like that's unpleasant or pleasant, right? If I'm already cold, maybe that's unpleasant. If I'm feeling too warm, maybe that's pleasant. That's feeling tones. That's vedana. It's that immediate sensation of that subjective sensation we get from experiences that we have. These are not emotions we're talking about. You know, these are often described as being either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And that is very simple for a good reason. We're meant to be keeping this simple. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, you know, there are these descriptions of the four foundations, but there is also, there is a refrain that is mentioned over and over. And there's a particular phrase that I love in that refrain that I'm going to pull out here. Yeah, it's that we establish mindfulness to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. For bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. So when we talk about pleasant and unpleasant and neutral, we're really touching just the barest knowledge of that subjective experience, right? We're not getting involved in the details and the complexity of what we might feel afterward, right? Like if I hear a sound and that sound is someone calling my name in anguish, right? There are probably a million things I'm going to feel, but the first thing I feel is probably an unpleasant sensation. Someone is yelling my name and it doesn't sound good, right? There is an unpleasant feeling tone that I get before all the flood of other things happen. It's that bare sensation of pleasant, unpleasant that we're touching on here, right? And there's another thing about that. Those things come with every experience, that pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And we don't really have control over those first things. So one thing that I think is very interesting and important about these feeling tones is just like, you know, if something pokes my cheek, I can't help but feel that. That isn't where I have choice. I also don't necessarily have choice over that first immediate reaction I have. If someone pokes me and it's irritating, I don't have control over the fact that it's an unpleasant feeling right away. There's a freedom in knowing that. That's something we're not responsible for. We can feel unpleasant about that, and that's okay. Our choice really comes after that. It's in what we do after we feel that unpleasantness and how we choose to proceed. What actions do we take? What thoughts do we let have control after that? Right? That's where we start having some control over our experience. So doing this mindfulness with just up to the point of feeling tones, bodily sensation and the feeling tones from those sensations, you know, we're getting just to that point where we have choice. And it's great to practice with that, especially because we learn where that point is, the point at which we start to have choice. And once we identify that point where we start to have choice, we get to, you know, hone in on that and decide, okay, now I realize this is the point where I have choice. This is where I can choose, right? All right, I'm running short on time. So I want to see if there's anything else that is urgent to recommend and say before we move on from here. Just a couple of things very briefly, without going over too much. So what all do we gain from practicing with feeling tones? Well, I just mentioned one of these things. We kind of get right up to the point where we have choice. And so we can see that point. Another thing we learn is that we have different reactions to the same things over time, right? You know, Anna Ossenfort, who's a teacher with Seattle Insight, she describes a friend who had a boyfriend And when that boyfriend, when she started dating him, she loved the cologne that he had, right? And as the relationship went sour, she started hating the cologne that he was wearing. And it's the same cologne, right? It's just because of all these conditions in her life changing, she started to hate that cologne. And what we learn from that is that these feeling tones aren't in the objects themselves, right? We might look at the object and say, that's the problem. But the feeling tones are inside us, right? You know, they reside within us. And there's something kind of relieving about realizing that. We don't have to fix that object, right? Another thing is when we watch these things come and go, right? If we're able to watch these bare feeling tones arise and fall away in meditation, you know, we see impermanence. And this can be very powerful. I have a friend who suffers from depression. And she has said to me that she's a meditator too. And she said to me the most powerful thing she learned for managing her depression was just that the feeling would pass. You know, nothing awful was going to remain forever. If she just experienced it and let it pass, it would go away. So we learn that from seeing these feeling tones come and go, right? Okay, I've already gone over by a couple of minutes. So I'll stop this here with the note also that we're going to go into much more detail on all of these in the day of mindful in the a day-long retreat on the four foundations of mindfulness. So you can think of this as just sort of touching on everything.